Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente, and you're thinking outside the long box.
Hey, Latverian girl, how's your kingdom? Subjugated to a madman with no face, or are you just a mindless minion? Is your border still patrolled by?
Everybody, welcome once again to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange in beautiful downtown Memphis. And to my immediate right down in beautiful, beautiful Louisiana is my good friend Mike Manning. How are you doing, Mikey?
I'm doing excellent this week. And how are you doing up in Boston, Tom Boucher?
Surviving the snow.
How much snow you got up there, buddy?
We got about a foot on Monday.
Oof. That is a lot of snow. All right.
Well,
today
we're flurrying every day since.
Well, just so you know that it's almost it is February here, so Tommy Snowstorm's in February, and it's right before Valentine's Day. So we're going to be doing our Thinking Outside the Long Box Valentine's Day special, which means we're going to be talking about some power couples that work and a couple that didn't work inside the Marvel, DC, and independent universe. I hope everyone's got a really good couple picked out. How about you, Mikey?
I do. I'm going to go with a couple from DC. This is one of my favorite power couples, originally appearing in Doom Patrol number 86, The Brain and Monsieur Mala. The Brain is a French scientist who created a super intelligent ape, who he named Monsieur Mala, who then later on became his sidekick when the Brain died in a horrible accident. Mala took the scientist's brain, put it in that of a robot, and would carry it around, and they together became supervillains because Niles Calder, the leader of the Doom Patrol, was actually the cause of the accident that killed the scientist, although the scientist's name has never been revealed. Later on, when Grant Morrison, one of my favorite writers, was doing Doom Patrol, he finally revealed that not only was Monsieur Mala the arms and legs for the Brain, but he was also deeply, deeply in love with the Brain. And it's really very touching for two supervillains to have such affection for each other. And I just thought it was one of the best power couples I've ever seen, not only in Doom Patrol, but also in other books like the Teen Titans.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, because I remember these characters, but not as well as maybe you do. Did Monsieur Mala or the Brain, what was their gender identity?
Well, Monsieur Mala is a male ape, and the Brain, you don't know because he's in a robot. I think most people use he, but never identified of whether it was a male or a female scientist. And well, they never discuss it because he doesn't have a body.
Very forward-thinking for the time, I suppose.
Yes.
All right, that's your power couple that kind of works for you. Tommy, you got a power couple that works for you?
I do. I'm going with the classics, Hawkman and Hawkgirl, or Hawkwoman. It's a love story that transcends both time and continuity.
That's an excellent point. As long as we're talking Valentine's Day, if they had a song, I would think that their song would be Time After Time, Cyndi Lauper version.
Could be.
I'm just saying. So yeah. What about this power couple do you like so much, Tommy?
Well, I mean, I've always liked Hawkman. I think visually, I think he's one of the more interesting characters in the DC universe. I always like the look of the wings and the headdress. And in the earlier Hawkman, Hawkgirl comics that I read, you know, they came from Thanagar together and kind of fought crime here on Earth, trying to learn Earth police methods. And then, as I said, in different continuities, in some continuities, they crash-landed in ancient Egypt and created a dynasty and have been reincarnated time after time and are always finding each other and getting together. And, you know, it's just a great couple that always seem to complement each other well.
All right, all right. By the way, Mikey, if your couple had a song, do you got a one? I think maybe Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto would work.
See, now you're assuming that the Brain's a male gender identity.
Well, it's just something I'm thinking of now.
Now, if it was Domo Arigato Monsieur Roboto.
Oh, it kind of goes both ways there. Maybe the French version.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, it's probably easy for most people to guess who my favorite power couple would be, and that, of course, would be Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, first becoming a power couple in the terrific Alias comic book series, where Jessica Jones is just exploring her new she's still superpowered, but new identity as a non-superhero named Jewel, mostly being a private eye. A lot of people probably saw the limited series on Netflix, which was terrific also. I've loved that a lot. Don't Give a Damn About My Bad Reputation by Joan Jett, I would think would be their song. What do you guys think of that?
I think it would be fitting for Luke Cage, at least.
Yeah.
No, it would be fitting for Jessica Jones, too. So, yeah, that's I always enjoyed that couple. I especially liked it after they had the baby and all their interplay during Civil War, where they were worried about whether they should flee to Canada or not. I thought they were a great couple, and they reflect a true married couple's dynamic where they don't always agree but have to work it out with themselves in the comics.
One of my favorite little bits ever is Luke Cage trying to talk her into becoming Power Woman. Does anyone remember that comic book?
I don't.
Oh, they're sitting in a beautiful French restaurant. They're sitting across from each other, and he goes, "Hey, you know, I know you decided to take my name when we get married, and I was just wondering if maybe," and he reaches over and grabs her hand and said, "How does Power Woman sound?" And she's like, "Not on your, no. He's like, "Come on, matching yellow tops." And he's going on, and it's ridiculous how much this sounds like an average couple talking about an average thing, and they're talking about something that, of course, is anything but average. It's a really funny bit. I believe it's Avengers Annual, the wedding special annual. But I could be wrong about that. I can look that up later. But it's seriously one of the funniest things you will ever read. And, of course, they immediately get attacked through the window of the French restaurant that they're sitting at.
It also kind of puts a reversal on the trope. I mean, usually in popular culture, you always see the woman who's trying to get the man to dress alike when they go out in public and such. And so that's kind of an interesting flip.
An excellent point, though he did want her to take his name. That seemed very important to him. That's very much part of our patriarchy that we see in male comic books. Not that I'm against that. And God knows I love my wife, Doctor Strange. all right, now let's talk a little bit about some power couples that did not work, did not make the cut for us. Mikey, you got one that was just too dysfunctional for you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, again, I grew up in the 80s, and so in addition to X-Men being my jam, I loved the Teen Titans. And the couple that never worked out was poor Changeling / Beast Boy, Garfield Logan, who had an unrequited love with Tara, who, as we all know, turned out to be the Judas amongst the group and had been sent in to infiltrate by Deathstroke. I was so rooting for them to work out because she was so mean to him, but he still really liked her and he wanted everything to work out. And then when it finally got revealed that she was actually working for Deathstroke and was like a 15-year-old sleeping with the 50-year-old Deathstroke, it was really creepy and freaked me out. And as soon as I read the comic, I was like, I have to talk to somebody about this.
She's someone in an office with a chair and a desk.
I probably should be talking to somebody. Perhaps that psychiatrist who helped out Bruce Wayne and Oliver Queen from that Brave and the Bold you were talking about.
Brave and the Bold number 85. All right. Would they have a theme song? Love Hurts. Let's go with that. You like that one? How about you, Tommy? Who do you have that just didn't work out very well for you?
Well, I think growing up in the 80s, I read a lot of Avengers, and I think the Vision and the Scarlet Witch was a power duo that kind of ended in a real bad way.
End well.
it kind of started in a bad way, too. I mean, in the Avengers, when they were kind of trying to steer the story arc towards that, it always seemed very kind of forced and – you know, does he love me? Does he even have emotions? Whereas, you know, then they got together and actually had children through her hex power. And then, well, the whole Vision getting mind wiped and her going insane and kind of going on a massive killing spree. And I think it didn't end up that well.
It was a whole thing. That's
because
a whole thing.
Humans and robots should not be together. It should always be robots and intelligent apes.
It's true. If the Scarlet Witch's power just turned her into an intelligent ape, it might have worked out.
I don't have a good song for this one. They're just too bizarre.
Love on the Rocks, Mr. Roboto.
I like Love on the Rocks on that one, maybe. You know, for when it comes to dysfunctional, no one had it worse off, I think, than poor Bobby Drake. Now, Bobby Drake had in a slightly older version of himself time travel, come back in time and tell him, hey, bud, just so you know, so you don't have to go through it, you're gay. And Bobby Drake's like, I'm not gay. And then he starts thinking about it and goes, oh, yeah, I am kind of gay. And it was a big revelation for him. And when you think about some of the women in his past. Yes.
You might want to start that over because it was actually a younger version that came out and told the older version, hey, look, I'm gay. How could you not be gay?
Oh, you know what? Sure. Let's not go back and do that. You know why? Because you can tell me I'm a little bit wrong on a comic book, and I will just kind of roll with it. Because everyone knows I am not the world's greatest at memorizing exact story arcs. So, Mikey, thank you for telling me that. I remember the comic book, but I didn't quite remember that it was the younger version coming back and telling the older version.
Yeah. And actually, it was Jean Grey that outed him.
Jean Grey outed him before that? Is that true?
Yeah, Jean Grey, the younger version of Jean Grey and Bobby Drake, the original X-Men, were captured by Beast from the past and brought to the future after Cyclops had done a whole bunch of bad stuff to try to bring Cyclops back in and remember all the dreams that they had under Professor X. And they ended up getting stuck in this timeline. And Jean was like, hey, Bobby, why do you keep on making inappropriate comments? Both you and I know that you're gay. And so she kind of told Bobby, we know you're gay. And then he's like, but why is my older version not gay? This doesn't make any sense. And then eventually the older version was like, yeah, you're right.
Well, good. I'm glad that kind of got settled. I'm a huge X-Men fan, but I'm an X-Men in the 80s fan. You guys kind of read a lot more of the new X-Men than I do. So thanks for correcting me on that one. But let's take a look at some of Bobby Drake's love interest. Rogue, a woman who couldn't be touched. And Kitty Pryde, a woman who, if she wanted to, didn't have to be touched. I think there was a little bit of writing on the wall there, or at least it gave the writers who decided to finally out Bobby Drake a lot of kind of wiggle room and at least a little bit of a nod and a wink. Do we have a good song for him? How about It's Raining Men?
That would be a good one. You know, he also dated Polaris.
Polaris.
There was a love triangle between him and Havoc.
So a woman who could repel men if she wanted to.
Exactly.
The
writing was on the wall throughout the decades. Let's just leave it at that.
It took years to get to it, but it finally came out.
All right, well, now it's time for us to talk about what's in the front of the long box, talking about some of the newer comic books that are coming out. Mikey, what do you got in the front of that long box today?
I am going to harken back to something you talked about a few episodes ago. Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat, she has a new comic book series out. So it's only on issue 2, so you should be able to go to your local comic book store and pick up the first 2 issues. It is an all-ages affair, splendidly written by Kate Leth and drawn by Brittany L. Williams. The whole premise of the comic is that Patsy Walker, who was once a romance comic character back in the 1940s all the way through the 1960s, is now a superhero. She brings in a lot of the female superheroes that she's friends with into the comic, and it's just very well written, incredibly entertaining, and suitable for all ages, so I highly recommend it.
Well, that's terrific. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box for us today?
in the back of the long box. I'm not going back too far. I'm going to talk about a comic called Dead Man's Run. It came out in February of 2014. It was written by Greg Pak, who did a lot of work on the Hulk and is famously known for his Hulk work. It was kind of an interesting comic. The premise was that there was a maximum security prison built on top of hell. And in the prison, the prisoners had no idea that hell was right underneath them, literally. And the military that were running the prison had a sort of contract or relationships with some of the souls in hell, where they would smuggle gold out of hell in exchange for comforts that were known in the physical world. So basically, there was kind of a social hierarchy in hell that was set up based on smuggling out gold. And it was kind of an interesting story. One of the main characters was a youngish person and his sister. The youngest person was a cartographer. And the military man that was kind of running the smuggling operation from Earthside died suddenly and had the cartographer killed so that he could go into hell and basically find a way for him to get out of hell. And it was kind of an interesting story. It had a lot of good ideas in it. You know, there was the gold was basically coming from blood of a fallen angel is where the source of the gold that was being smuggled out of hell. I thought that was kind of interesting. Overall, I would say that the comic is worth reading.
Who was the publisher on that, Tom?
Aspen Comics.
Oh, Aspen.
So it's an independent comic. Company or a smaller known comic company. They did Fathom and a couple other books, but they're not one of the huge three. Tom, do you have anything culturally relevant that you'd like to talk about?
I do. Thank you for asking. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. I wanted to talk about The Brave and the Bold, number 85, The Senator's Been Shot. In this comic book, Bruce Wayne and Oliver Queen are both talking about the future of Gotham in different ways. Oliver Queen wants to help build this island outside of the city that would bring in jobs and revenue. Batman is very interested in a senator who is doing an anti-crime bill against a supervillain named Mikolos Minotaur. It's a single appearance for this villain. He doesn't actually appear anywhere else, which I think is interesting. This villain is kind of a supervillain Donald Trumpist, Lex Luthor type villain who's an industrialist who's going against both Oliver Queen as wanting to make the island and trying to do a counterbid, and against Bruce Wayne because he's a murderous psychopath who the anti-crime bill would very much deter. The senator gets shot, and the senator asks Bruce Wayne, who's at his side, to take his place in the Senate while he's recovering, because apparently you can do that. I don't think you can really do that. But Bruce Wayne reluctantly says he'll do it only after going to the senator's son, who is a psychologist. And he confesses to the psychologist that he's very torn. Psychologist says, "Why are you torn?" He goes, "I'm not sure if I could do more good as Bruce Wayne, a millionaire who could take the senator's place and do this vote on the Senate floor, or as Batman." And the psychologist says, "Well, what are you talking about?" He goes, "Well, I'm Batman." He just tells the psychiatrist he's Batman. And the psychiatrist says, "Well, you know, we have patient-client privilege now. I'll never tell anyone you're Batman, Bruce Wayne." And Bruce Wayne starts talking to the psychiatrist about which would be better for him to pursue. In the next page, Oliver Queen comes to the same psychiatrist and says, "Hey, I'm having a problem and I need someone to talk to, and I know we can have client privilege. I'm not sure if I can do more good in the world as Oliver Queen, the industrialist, or as Green Arrow." And the psychiatrist says, "Well, you're Green Arrow." He goes, "I thought you'd be more surprised." Psychiatrist took it with a grain of salt. So he's counseling both Bruce Wayne and Oliver Queen as Batman and the Green Arrow throughout this comic book about how they can do the most good for the world as superheroes or as industrial philanthropists who try to save the world. In the end, they both decide to carry on the mantle of the Green Arrow and Batman and as philanthropists and millionaires. They see their duality as a necessary evil to continue forward. I love this comic book because it really shows something that Neil Adams himself said to us. He pulled me and Mike aside one day, and Tom, I think you were there too, weren't you?
If you're talking about when he showed us Batman Black and White, then yes.
Yeah, he pulled us aside and he said, I don't think the world needs Batman. I think the world needs more Bruce Waynes. So that really moved me. It really made me think, you know, I do I try to, you know, do what I can because of that particular sentence to me in my life. So I really think that the world needs more Bruce Waynes and more Oliver Queens. They don't necessarily need a Batman and a Green Arrow. Though a Green Arrow and a Batman would be awesome. Let's not get that wrong. I'm not anti-Batman or Green Arrow. But, you know, Donald Trump actually has the capacity right now to be Bruce Wayne or Oliver Queen. He's choosing to be a giant talking hairpiece.
Actually, didn't you just compare him to a supervillain?
Lex Luthor?
Let's not talk about Lex Luthor.
I know Lex Luthor's your hero, Mikey. I don't want to get too deep into it, but Donald Trump isn't cool enough to be Lex Luthor.
So Mikey, what your position is, the world needs more Donald Trumps?
Donald Trump is barely cool enough to be Justin Hammer.
I think the world needs less reality stars in general. But I will say something about Brave and the Bold, number 85. It was the first appearance of Oliver Queen's signature goatee that Neil Adams drew. So if you are a fan of history, that is a great comic to pick up.
It's also why that particular comic book, which I would have just picked up, is so damn expensive. If it wasn't for the new goatee and costume, it probably would have been fairly cheap to grab. All right, so let's talk about plugs real quick, guys. I know we got a big thing coming up this weekend. Is anybody nervous? Next weekend, I should say.
No.
I can't wait. I am a little nervous that I won't be able to get all my cosplays together, but other than that, I'm fine.
I am just nervous about which restaurants we are going to eat at. I know we're definitely going to McGuire's Pub when we're in Pensacola. For those of you who don't know, you obviously haven't listened to the podcast because we've been plugging it for the last four podcasts, but we're going to be at Pensacon next weekend, the 18th, 19th, and 20th. Right, Tom?
I know you're not talking to me.
I think it starts on the 19th.
19th, 20th, and 21st, then. We're going to be doing four panels there. You can find us. We're easy to find. You can search for our names on the app. But it's going to be a great time. Also, in addition to that, we'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for their awesome music that they provide us every week. If you haven't listened to Kirby Crackle, go check them out at kirbycrackle.com. Or even better, go to iTunes and download their music.
That's right, because if you love something, then you got to support it. One other thing we want to say, that at the end of this little podcast, we're going to have a little bonus for everyone. Our own Mike Manning talked to Fred Van Lent, a writer for Archer and Armstrong, down at the New Orleans Comic Con. That was about a month ago. Is that right?
Yes, it was an excellent interview. I only had a few minutes to talk to him because he had something else going on, but he was nice enough to give us some time, and I am a huge fan of his. If you like comedy in your comics, this is the writer to check out.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente, and you're thinking outside the long box.
All right, so could you tell us about Ivar the Time Walker? Why did you feel compelled to write a story about him?
Well, I'd been doing Archer and Armstrong, which is a sort of a long, venerated, valiant title that was created by Barry Windsor Smith, the great Barry Windsor Smith. And Armstrong is from a family of immortals, and one of his immortal brothers is Ivar, who is a super genius. Armstrong is super strong. Gilad, the Eternal Warrior, is sort of super fierce and super tactical. And Ivar is sort of the super genius, but he's also a bit of a jerk. I like to describe him as a cross between Reed Richards and John Constantine. He's smart enough to save the world, but enough of a bastard to screw you over while he's doing it. And I really like the premise I came up with for Ivar, which was this idea that he's found someone who's about to discover time travel and it's going to ruin her life. And so he goes back in time and try to save her from villains from the future who are apparently trying to capture her. But as she goes in on this crazy time travel adventure with Ivar, she learns that Ivar maybe is not telling her all the truth, and maybe he himself has some sinister motives for taking her away from these folks from the future.
And if you've listened to our episode podcast number 3 or 4, we talked and raved about Archer and Armstrong on that episode. So go back and listen to that episode, and you will see how much we love Archer and Armstrong.
Thank you.
Are you also working on anything else besides Ivar?
Yeah, I write Conan the Avenger for Dark Horse, which is the current segment of Dark Horse's long-running Conan series, which sort of lays out Conan's life from beginning to end as Robert E. Howard sort of did it. I mean, Howard did the Conan stories out of order, so Dark Horse has done a fun thing by putting them all in chronological order. And we just started our final arc of Conan the Avenger, which is an adaptation of A Witch Shall Be Born, which is a very famous Howard story. It's, you've seen the Schwarzenegger movie, the bit where he gets crucified with the vultures and everything. That's directly out of A Witch Shall Be Born and is really the only thing in that movie that's directly out of anything that Howard wrote. So I really, really had a fun time doing that with Brian Ching, the artist.
Now, didn't you also work on Big Trouble in Little China?
Yes, I'm currently doing Big Trouble in Little China. Sorry, I didn't mean to make it sound like Conan and Valiant are the only two things I'm doing. Right now I'm doing Big Trouble in Little China for Boom, and that's super fun. I'm just wrapping up an arc with Dan McDade, and then I'm about to start an arc with Victor Santos called Old Trouble in Little China, which is where Jack Burton and his pal Winona Chi, daughter of Wang, get sent back to the 19th century San Francisco. Fun fact, and the reason I sort of came up with this idea in the first place, was that the movie Big Trouble in China was originally supposed to be a Western. It was originally supposed to be set in like 1886. So we're not quite set in 1886, but it's some awesome stuff.
Now, Jack Burton in the movie is great because he was actually the sidekick. Is it tough writing a comic sidekick as the main character for your comic?
No, definitely not. It's fun because Winona Chi, his partner in crime, is they always get into fights. It's a running joke in the book as to whether which one of them is the other sidekick.
Attention, Dylan Dare.
But I really enjoy it. I really love the voice that Burton and the screenwriter, or that Kurt Russell and the screenwriters and John Carpenter came up with Jack. It's really a fun book to write.
And it's excellent. Everybody out there should be reading everything this gentleman writes because it is gold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I got some stuff coming up. I've got I'm doing Assassin's Creed book for Titan about the Templars. That'll drop, I believe, in February. And I have a creator-owned book from Dark Horse called Weird Detective that's like an H.P. Lovecraft police procedural that's coming out in the summer.
So we do a panel called Horrible, Horrible, Horrible Stereotypes in Comic Books. Okay. What is your favorite horrible stereotype in comic books?
Oh, wow. There's a lot to choose from. I don't know. Like, give me an example.
Well, classic Luke Cage, where he's the black exploitation, is an example of that.
I do love Luke Cage, and I did a whole Power Man series that brought back a lot of those old black exploitation characters, which are always super fun. I don't know. I guess I don't have a favorite one. Nothing's really leaping to mind. I mean, it's always fun to sort of undermine those stereotypes. So I guess Ebony from The Spirit's pretty out there. Product of its time,
All right, we actually talked about Ebony White today at the Horrible Stereotype panel, and we've talked about him past podcasts too. How he's weird because he's drawn horribly, but they actually made him a decent character, even though he's a sidekick. But they give him some credit.
Exactly.
All right. Other than your stuff, could you recommend one comic that you read that you're like, wow, everybody should be reading this?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't produce the author's name. It's The Arab of the Future by this guy Said. It's a memoir of him growing up between France and Syria, and also he spent some time in Libya. And it's just very interesting for a childhood memoir from a very well-known cartoonist in France who was one of the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists. Certainly wasn't there at the time of the attack, but it's called The Arab of the Future. And if you're into current events and what's going on in the world today, I definitely recommend picking it up.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Jackson. I shut it off, I turn it off. Atom bomb, they worship down and down and up. I got the skills to keep me out of danger. Would you believe it that I almost drowned while crossing a